We're talking now about the challenges being faced by regional airlines when it comes to satisfying some regulations that have changed in the last couple of years and the business environment there. And my guest is Paul Preidecker, who's the chief instructor for Air Wisconsin. So, local friend, thanks so much for coming. I'm going to spin your mic around just a little bit so it's pointed at you. Thanks for coming, Paul.
Pleasure to be here, as always. Always great to be at EAA.
Well, I was just going to mention you've visited with us several times in the past, and through your visits, we've gotten kind of a running picture of the situations and challenges of running a regional airline and how you acquire and manage the pilot population. So, since we talked last time, there's a new reg on the books that is causing you to adapt. Talk about the regulatory changes that you're facing now.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I've been privileged to be an instructor at Air Wisconsin for about 13 years, and I'll never say that I've seen it all, but I've seen a lot in terms of the changes. When I first hired, it required 2,500 hours total time to become a pilot with Air Wisconsin. I've seen it as low as 500 hours when the market conditions were driving it in that direction, and everything in between. You know, as a result of the accident that occurred in 2009 up in Buffalo, there was an extensive review of, you know, rules, regs, policies, procedures, and there is a law that is Public Law 111-216 is the official name of it. And it enacts on August the 2nd of 2013, and the short of it is that law requires every flight deck crew member to have an ATP, which automatically brings with it a 1,500-hour flight time requirement, plus some other parameters as well. And up until now, a first officer could come to a regional airline or any other airline with this, essentially a commercial license, which had a minimum of 250. Of course, many airlines went above and beyond that, but now we're faced with a public law that says everybody needs an ATP. So with the pilot shortage that everybody is talking about and the new rules and regs for pilot certification, we see some challenges ahead.
So describe the typical gap between experience or certifications of your pilots and what this is requiring.
Well, we've had our minimum requirements in the neighborhood of 1,000 to 2,000 hours over the past few years.
And market demand or market supply drives that up and down typically?
It does, Mike. I mean, there's certainly a supply and demand issue that's involved with this.
Mm-hmm.
I think the effect that we're going to have on this is, for example, what will the classic four-year flight schools do? It used to be that a four-year flight school, perhaps like Embry-Riddle or University of North Dakota, there are many fine ones out there, an individual could go through their program 4 years and get an aviation degree and get his flight certificates, but he'd only have perhaps 220 or 240 hours of flight time. In order for that individual now to think about a career with the airlines, he's going to have to spend some significant time over and above, you know, his finishing up his collegiate program in order to be into the pool, you know, so he can get his 1,500 hours. We don't have the final ruling from the FAA yet. There is some discussion that if you come from an accredited school, they may lower the requirement of an ATP down to 1,000 hours. But the final rule from the FAA has not been issued in response to this. So right now, we're assuming that everybody needs an ATP, and we've just set our minimums at this point.
Is there any scenario where a student in an aviation technology program could either graduate or could be in a longer-term program that would end with the ATP so that he's not on his own out there afterwards?
There's a number of initiatives out there to try to determine how can somebody with an accredited degree enter the aviation airline industry sooner. But right now, many people are assuming what I would consider is worst-case scenario, and that is it's an ATP as we know it today.
The law is written. Yeah.
Now, is it possible that the ATP will be rewritten to be something else, you know, in a year from now? I wouldn't begin to say.
Like you said, you've almost seen it all now. Yeah.
But probably not enough.
Okay.
So,
all right.
So we're looking at keeping our minimums high and keeping our standards high. We are looking at, you know, what will this new rule do for us, you know, going forward. Okay. Right now, we're still hiring pilots. You know, there are still opportunities. So it's a good time to be in aviation. We're still hiring pilots. We've hired 75 or 80 this year. My sense is that will continue. But it does place an additional burden on the four-year colleges, on the technical schools that are aviation related. It's a matter of, you know, how will all of the airlines staff their seats? I mean, traditionally the major airlines have drawn from the regionals. The regionals have gone, you know, outside to get their pilots. With the new rule that, you know, we'll find a way to work with, it may just exacerbate what the shortage is.
You know, it wasn't too long ago that a lot of commercial pilots were being furloughed. And
That's right.
It wasn't too long before that there was a lot of news about shortage of pilots. So here now we're back to shortage of pilots. What's with the up and down?
You know, it depends on the numbers that you look at. I mean, if you look at the most aggressive numbers that Boeing has released, I think they've said that over the next 20 years, there's an estimate of 460,000 pilots that will be required.
This is
worldwide.
Globally.
Worldwide. That's right. And that is a factor, actually. I'm quite well acquainted with the director of the aviation program at the University of North Dakota. 40% of their graduates are going to the Asian countries for their careers because the Asian countries do not have the same, you know, certification requirements that we have. So they're looking to place their students in, you know, in other countries. So that might take care of part of the global need, but it will increase the burden, of course, on the U.S. supply.
So in a supply and demand scenario like you're talking about, one of the things that is supposed to happen in theory is that if supply goes down, price goes up, right?
But this is aviation. That's correct. We don't know where that will go, Mike. There's always that discussion amongst the labor associations and management about how will this drive that. I'm not in a position to speculate. My crystal ball is a little fuzzy these days about what that will mean. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, though.
Yeah.
Our main focus, I think, is, you know, whether or not you fundamentally believe that the 1,500-hour ATP requirement is appropriate or not. From our standpoint, we look at not just at the total time, but what has an applicant done with their time. There are many ways to get 1,500 hours of experience and to meet the certification requirements of the ATP. Our emphasis is what's a person done with their time, what's the time period they've, you know, been a pilot, and how much experience have they had. You know, if you have a pilot with, you know, 1,500 or 2,000 hours that has a job flying day trips in the Bahamas, that sounds like a very fun job, but our experience has said that, you know, we need somebody who's got the same amount of experience, possibly in the same aircraft, flying on the East Coast, for example, where the airspace is more complicated, the weather's more of a challenge. So, you know, in reality, Mike, it's a combination. It's time plus the experience.
So an hour in the cockpit is not an hour in the cockpit necessarily.
I think to some extent that is true.
Yeah. Okay. So is it still reasonable for someone to leave school, become an instructor pilot for a period of time, and then move on? Is it just that period of time is longer than it used to be now?
Well, we think that's a likely scenario. And of course, the flight schools are facing this and trying to sort that out. The thing that is a bit of a challenge is it's very easy to focus on the 1,500-hour requirement to meet the ATP, but behind the scenes, and as another part of that requirement, is you need 500 hours of cross-country time. Well, if you're a flight instructor at your local school, you're doing mainly local flying, so the time to build your cross-country time is actually key to this as well. So what may have taken 1 year, you know, to get up to the requirements, perhaps the time would really be 2 years.
Wow.
You know,
interesting set of challenges.
It's just, And it is.
A little bit of a Rubik's Cube, almost,
well,
to try to make the pieces fit,
you know,
together.
And people think that this is a problem for the flight schools and the regional airlines, but the major airlines, of course, are looking at this as well, because a lot of their feed for their pilots is coming from the regional airlines. So if the flight schools are, you know, having trouble feeding the regional airlines might therefore have trouble feeding the major airlines. So it's an industry issue. This is not just a regional airline problem. This is something that the entire industry is looking at.
So it almost sounds like, from what you're saying, that the largest airlines have just as much of a stake in solving this problem as the regional.
Absolutely.
It just may not hit them as fast.
Absolutely. The various trade associations that represent the major airlines, the Regional Airline Association is the group that is kind of looking over the regional airlines. But Airlines for America, it was formerly ATA, Airline Transport Association, they are very closely watching this to see how it shakes out.
Well, I'm sure we're all going to be staying tuned on this one.
The flight instructing community for sure will be, you know, the airlines will be, and of course the flight schools. Yeah. You know, it's an important issue for everybody.
Well, thanks for coming in to talk through this.
Mike, it's a real pleasure.